There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it? The other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riso-Dillon. I'm your host. On today's program, Chicago's newspaper, The Streets, is in financial trouble. What about other street newspapers? And Time Warner Cable backs down from possibly capping your internet. That and more. You do want to stay tuned. Well, this week I was very sad to learn that Streetwise, Chicago's newspaper of the streets, is hitting financial troubles. They used to depend on $120,000 in foundation support, but now this year's budget has only about half of that, $60,000. And the magazine says it's going to need at least $75,000 in donations to keep running. In fact, before the economic downturn, they were selling 1,500 more issues a week than they are now. And in a worst-case scenario, it's about 45 days of operating money left at Streetwise before they would have to shut down. And I had Streetwise folks on back in February to talk about the paper and tell us about this newspaper, which tries to empower people who are homeless or near homeless, who are living in poverty, by both giving them an avenue for expression and a way to make a living. So we're going to listen to an excerpt of that interview back from February to give us an idea more about what is Streetwise and why it's so important.
Streetwise has been a publication for going on 17 years now, and the goal of the paper is to provide opportunity for men and women who might not find it anywhere else. Monday and Wednesday, the organization has training, and anyone can come in. They don't have to have any identification. We don't care about their background, their education. We just want to give them an opportunity. And after completing a short orientation, we give them 15 free papers or magazines now and get them set up in a location, and then they are responsible after those initial free papers or magazines to keep their business going. So it's, you know, it's on their time. They are responsible to reinvest in their business and to take it seriously.
Because we're here and we've brought interest to it, other papers are starting to cover it. I think maybe readers like to know about gritty news. We get people telling us they like to read about the vendors. They like to read about our perspective on poverty. You know, the world through our vendors' eyes sometimes, how they survive.
Suzanne Hanney, editor-in-chief of Streetwise.
Typically, we'll do stories on not just homelessness, but any issue in low that has to do with low-income people. And it could even be about policy. I'm going to be doing some stories. We've done stories on schools, the school closings, because obviously, if you can't afford to go to a private school, you're dependent on the public schools, and that's one thing that keeps you in Chicago. The other thing that people need to be aware of is many things can make you homeless. I mean, many people are homeless, but they're not living out on the street. They're doubled up in someone else's home because of the economy. You know, it can take, as we say, you know, most people live paycheck to paycheck. And so it can take any one little thing to knock you out of the ballpark. You can have an unexpected medical expenditure, an unexpected car expenditure, and that can make you late with your rent or late with your utilities, and you're already behind the eight ball, and then it doesn't take much to knock you out. So we'll typically do stories on that as well. We also do stories on entrepreneurs because, of course, our vendors are entrepreneurs. They sell the paper, and they're trying to make enough cash to make their next step.
I asked Ben Cook, production and marketing director, where the idea for Streetwise came from.
It was 1992. Jed Loshy was the person who founded the paper, and during that time it was a once-a-month publication, a black-and-white newspaper. And he was actually a little bit ahead of the curve. Right now, there are, I believe, 77 street papers or magazines like Streetwise around the world, and they started about 15 years ago. So you can see Streetwise is about a year or two ahead of the idea of creating a magazine or a paper for people to distribute. There's 77 publications like Streetwise around the world, and it's called the International Network of Street Papers, and Streetwise has become one of the leading voices internationally in participating in this format. This service recently started submitting original Wire content all around the world, and each week Streetwise publishes a story from one of these other street papers, whether it be Scotland or Kenya or Canada. And by doing so, we're trying to make people see this is an international problem. All countries face this in one way or another, and we're doing what we can to make it better.
Our function is to be a voice for low-income people and to be a voice for good policy, equitable policy.
Suzanne Hanney.
I think there's a lot of activism. We tend to, in our calendar events, we'll push some of the benefits that might be happening, but we also push activism in the intellectual and the old-time 60s sense. We push it every which way because we like the fact that people are involved. We want to reward their efforts. We want to reward their heart, anybody who makes the city a better place is part of our niche.
And that was Suzanne Hanney, who is the editor-in-chief at Streetwise. And we also heard from Ben Cook, who is their production and marketing director, playing back a portion of the interview that was on the February 4th edition of Media Geek from this year. You can listen to the entirety of that program at radio.mediageek.net. We played it to shed some light on the place of Streetwise, a weekly newspaper of the streets that is here in Chicago that is now having financial troubles with especially loss of foundation grants, nonprofit grants there. Recently, Streetwise underwent a change from being a newsprint newspaper to being a glossy magazine. Also underwent a change of increasing its cover price from $1 to $2. Some reasons for making the change included response to readers who like the more portable format and also response to advertisers who were looking for that same format, the ability to have glossy and full-color ads. What's interesting here about this is that at the same time, New York Times, on the 13th of April, published an article about other street newspapers around the country that seem to be doing well despite the economic downturn. Street Roots in Portland, Oregon, has seen its monthly sales increase to 16,000 from 11,000 in a few months, and has now gone from 60 people selling the newspaper to 100. In Seattle, Real Change neared 72,000 in circulation in December, its highest level ever. And at the Denver Voice, another street newspaper, 117 people attended sales training sessions in February alone. Although what it seems to me about Streetwise is that it's really not experiencing necessarily a significant downturn in sales, although, as I noted before, there are 1,500 fewer issues sold a week than before the downturn, so much as that it's losing funding in the nonprofit sector, which is something which is happening all over the place to nonprofit organizations and charities everywhere, since many granting organizations rely on having basically an endowment in the stock market. So when the stock market goes down, so does their endowment, so does their ability to give grants. So this is something I definitely will be watching here. Certainly will be watching for street newspapers all over the country and all over the world. And if there's a street newspaper in your community that you'd like to tell me more about, drop me an email, paul@mediageek.net. And I threw out a Twitter question about the upcoming story about bandwidth caps and internet. And check it out, twitter.com/MediaGeek. And tweet back if you have any comments about this as we get into this particular one. But this is kind of interesting. About a year ago, Time Warner Cable, one of the largest internet service providers in the U.S., announced that it was going to start experimenting with putting bandwidth caps on its customers, essentially placing a limit on the amount of data that you can download as a Time Warner broadband customer. So typically, when you pay for broadband service, you pay for a particular speed, 1.5 megabits download speed, 6 megabits download speed, on all the way up, especially if you have like a Verizon Fios, which is a fiber-based service, you can get up to 50 megabits download speed. And that, you know, that determines how fast things come down to your computer, how quickly you can download things, and especially whether or not you can get high-definition video content and other things on your computer. But more typical people get 1.5 to 6 megabits, and that determines how much speed you get at a time. What Time Warner wants to do is to then establish an absolute cap that you cannot download more than a certain amount at your particular rate. And if you were to go over that, you would pay an overage fee. So Time Warner tested this out in Beaumont, Texas, where apparently only 14% of users in that trial city ever exceeded their cap at all, and said now that it wanted to move it off to Austin, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, Rochester, New York, and Greensboro, North Carolina. And these plans give you, the plans it was proposing would give you caps of 5, 10, 20, or 40 gigabytes of data transfer a month, with prices ranging from $30 to $55 a month. And if you don't really think about how much data you use in a given day or a given week or a given month, it's, you know, it starts to sound kind of reasonable. If you look at some of the competitors, if you have a DSL service from AT&T, again, one of the largest internet service providers in the country, there's no official cap. Although, certainly, if you are a huge user of bandwidth beyond a certain point, you'll probably get a nasty letter from them. There's no cap, and you get your 6 megabit per second service for $35 a month. Comcast, another big, large internet service provider, offers internet service at about $42 a month and has acknowledged that they do have a 250 gigabyte a month cap in place. So what this works out to is that Comcast is going to charge you about 17 cents per gigabyte if you download that full 250 gigabytes in a month. By comparison, at the least expensive plan that Time Warner was planning on offering, which was 5 gigabytes a month at $30, that works out to $6 a gigabyte. $6 a gigabyte was what they were offering up, compared to the 17 cents, which Comcast, which a lot of people are not big fans of, was going to offer. And then just to give you an idea of what you know, how much data that is, a DVD, a typical DVD-R, if you record it yourself, has about 5 gigabytes on it. So if you're going to try and download that much data, I mean, which could be downloading software, because you can often buy software online and download it rather than get the CD or DVD shipped to you, it might cost you an additional $30 to get that software downloaded over and above the cost. A movie DVD is 5 to 10 gigabytes. So if you think about getting a DVD quality movie, you might use up the entirety of your bandwidth for the month just to get a couple of movies downloaded. Now, if you up it, and you know, it always pays to buy in bulk, right? If you were to get the 40 gigabyte plan from Time Warner Cable, they were saying it was going to cost $55 a month, where you'd be paying a mere $1.38 per gigabyte, which, you know, compared to $6 gigabyte, sounds pretty good. Doesn't sound so good compared to 17 cents per gigabyte. Now, what Time Warner Cable was claiming is that they need to implement these caps to, quote, make improvements to infrastructure, end quote, so that they can create higher speed access. However, by comparison, Comcast is also rolling out major upgrades. And in Chicago, in some places, it's already selling a 50 megabit per second plan for $139.95 a month. Which at their 250 gigabyte cap is 56 cents per gigabyte. And that's for super, super high speed. And even looking at this further, Wired magazine reported that Time Warner's broadband costs had decreased by 12% in 2008, even as revenues from the broadband business increased by 11%. At the same time, the price of internet backbone traffic, and a backbone is what brings internet traffic all over the country to all internet service providers, the price of that traffic dropped by 50% the last few years, every year. So costs are going down, but the prices seem to be wanting to go up. So there's a fair amount of outcry about this. People in the communities that were going to be affected, especially places like Rochester, New York, Austin, Texas, Greensboro, North Carolina, called their congressional representatives, called Time Warner, raised a ruckus. So Time Warner backed off a little bit last week and said, well, okay, we hear you. We're going to price the caps a little better. So we're going to give you a less expensive one. For $15 a month, you can get a one gigabyte cap. So apparently they went from the plan being $6 a gigabyte to $15 a gigabyte. I'm not sure how that's a great savings. Although within they said that only 30% of its customers use less than 1 gigabyte a month. And it said it would up all the other caps so that you keep the price the same and give you more. Well, that didn't really seem to placate too many people because the prices didn't really drop all that much. So Congressman Eric Massa, Democrat of New York, then announced a plan to introduce a bill placing limits on the ability of companies like Time Warner Cable to cap its connections, especially in areas where it is a virtual monopoly, because there are still places where you can only get internet service via cable and not by DSL. Then a somewhat more powerful legislator, New York Senator Chuck Schumer, started to investigate and still plans to keep his eye on the situation. Because what happened on April 16th is Time Warner's cried uncle. They said, all right. People don't seem to be too happy about this. And then tried to claim that, well, it actually had been a little premature in announcing what was going on. Oh, no, we're just thinking about doing this, but we're not going to do this. And it may have something to do with more than 15,000 people who wrote Congress to protest this unfair, what they called an unfair price hike. And they said they're going to hold off on any more bandwidth cap tests, quote, while the customer education process continues. And it's something that we need to pay more attention to. And it's an interesting approach because in the debate that has happened in the last few years about network neutrality and where companies like Comcast have attempted to block certain types of traffic on their network and claiming that some users are eating the entire all-you-can-eat buffet, they're saying that, yes, we need to place limits on people. We need to make sure that one or a few users don't take down our network. On the other hand, broadband expansion in the U.S. has been very slow. We were promised 100 megabits to the home by now, back in 1996, 1997, when the large ISPs, the large telecommunication companies, were going to Congress and going to the state legislatures begging for all sorts of regulatory relief so that they could begin to offer us higher speed service, even though service has not exactly taken off. So there's been a big debate about this. And something which a lot of advocates of network neutrality, a lot of advocates of a free internet have said is that they can understand that it might be necessary for you to have to pay for the amount you download, that instead of it being an all-you-can-eat buffet, there ought to be a cap. And you can select what that cap is, so that someone who downloads very little, doesn't watch a lot of video online, doesn't listen to a lot of podcasts online, could select a particular plan that would reflect their needs. And somebody who downloads a lot of video, who maybe lives on the iTunes music store and needs to have gigabytes and gigabytes a month, could pay for more. What people are really ticked off about the Time Warner plan is really not so much that they wanted to institute the caps, but that the caps were so absurdly low at a time when more and more people are moving to getting their entertainment online or moving towards using the internet to get their video to share and to get newspapers, etc. It seems like an inopportune time to boost the costs associated with this, especially at such an absurd level as even 40 gigabytes per month, if you think about how small a 40 gigabyte hard drive is. Eric Yarnell is there at the controls here, helping Media Geek go along.
Yeah, the talk and roll controls. Anyway, I just had a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What do places like NBC, like NBC.com, places that do a lot of streaming content, of like TV shows and mm-hmm. things like that. What would they think about bandwidth restrictions?
You know, it's kind of it's actually a very interesting situation because these companies are all sort of in bed together. So an NBC is not going to go out and specifically raise a ruckus about this. I actually had an interesting opportunity a little more than a year ago at an industry conference called Streaming Media, listening to the guys behind BitTorrent, which is a file sharing application, which is the ability to speed up downloads online through file sharing. Because they actually have a for-profit business where they sell their technology to companies like CNN, like NBC, which enables them to basically take advantage of peer-to-peer file sharing to make sure that people can stream their content faster. And when asked directly about the Comcast blocking of BitTorrent, the representative from BitTorrent said, well, they're only blocking the free version of BitTorrent, which people use to share, say, software used to, you know, some do illegal file sharing, but a lot of people use to sort of distribute music. Nine Inch Nails is a band right now that distributes its albums for free by BitTorrent. They said, well, Comcast isn't blocking a free one because we've already worked out a deal for the not free one.
Makes sense.
And this is where that issue of network neutrality comes in, right? It's this issue of, well, then is it only the small guys, the independent guys, or the people who don't have the bucks to cut a special deal with Time Warner Cable or Comcast who are going to be blocked while the Comcast allows CNN's content to flow through freely because CNN has paid them already under the table, so to speak. And you think about Time Warner Cable, well, I mean, Time Warner Turner is the owner of CNN and lots of related cable companies and other related streaming properties online. It occurs to me they might get a free pass. And that's what the big concern is with regard to the issue of network neutrality, that a company like Comcast will favor some content, will favor some providers, maybe even channels that it owns itself, over and above your ability to get podcasts or be able to get YouTube videos, over and above your ability to get other content that hasn't already been bought and paid for. Because there's this really great principle that the internet was built upon, which is called peering. And the idea behind that is that you move everyone's traffic. I move your traffic, you move my traffic. And so we all pay some money to connect to the internet and to get a certain level of service. And beyond that, we peer. We pass along data unfettered. And that's what's really worked up to this point, so that every home user doesn't have his or her internet blocked or filtered by their local ISP. So even if you have Time Warner Cable, they're not going to stop you from watching Fox News online, right? You can continue to do so, or stop you from listening to Air America online. They're not supposed to be able to do that. And to a large extent, that still remains in practice, even though it is not necessarily so protected under law. And it continues to be a huge football. And it's something which the likes of Time Warner and other ISPs have been fighting either legislatively or been fighting at the FCC. With the stimulus bill coming out, you know, allocating billions of dollars to help create more broadband in the United States, especially rural broadband in the United States, and to extend internet access to all, there are requirements that at a minimum that any grant recipient rolling out broadband must adhere to the principles contained in the FCC's broadband policy statement. It's a statement of four principles of what effectively is network neutrality. And the government is required to publish in consultation with the FCC the non-discrimination network interconnection obligations that shall be contractual conditions of the grants awarded. That's TechnoSpeak saying that these new broadband connections should not be walled off gardens, and they should not be exclusive. They should be essentially neutral to the content that they pass, and that people should not be blocked from seeing particular things. And you can block things in a strict sense, right, in a censorship type way, where you say, no, you can't see Fox News, or no, you can't see Air America. Or you can do it in a way in which only you can only have so much of the free content, or you're stuck only getting the stuff which has been paid for before. But so Time Warner backed off and backed off because people raised a ruckus. So it is still a technique which works occasionally, but we will have to remain vigilant. And we watch this year after year over the last decade or so. It's always this battle. It's ongoing. It's a constant moving fight, playing whack-a-mole of the big companies like Comcast or Time Warner or other internet service providers making incursions into our ability to freely use the internet, to freely send data, to freely receive data, either by blocking particular types of traffic or by attempting to levy really unreasonable price limitations on top of our internet. And it's only with vigilance that these things get beaten back. But as of yet, none of it is necessarily declared absolutely illegal or improper. And so it will only be this sort of vigilance that allows us to keep on top of it. And in other news, I mentioned last week that right now the Third Circuit Court of Appeals is sitting on a challenge to revised media ownership rules, which the FCC passed at the end of 2007. These rules would greatly increase the number of cross-owned newspapers and television stations. And remember, that was the big question of last week. Was would the ability to have television stations or television station owners buy local newspapers help save them? That was the big debate, which we discussed there, such that even Commissioner Michael Copps, the current acting chairman, who's normally very anti-consolidation, started to seem like he's getting a little soft because newspapers are having such a hard time. Well, a challenge to that expansion of cross-ownership rules to allow more of these combinations is in front of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. And just recently, the Court of Appeals says that they are going to delay their ruling on this. They're going to hold off on it until a newly constituted FCC can take another look at it if it chooses to. Remember, we're going to see a new FCC under Obama, although it's been very slow to come about. With the Senate being busy with other confirmations and other business. So no new FCC commissioners have been yet assigned to the FCC. We're going to see a new chairman, very likely, Julius Genachowski, who is a former classmate of President Obama and also a former lawyer to dot-coms and also a former lawyer at the FCC during the Clinton administration. And then there will still be a couple more seats to fill. Full FCC is five. Three of those commissioners will be Democrats because it is the Democrats in the White House. But they're down one Republican. They're down one Democrat. And one Democrat is leaving, Jonathan Adelstein. So they need to fill it with another one. So it may be a while till it's a fully reconstituted FCC that can take a look again at this cross-ownership issue. The last time when the last loosening of rules passed in the end of 2007 was a Republican-dominated commission. And by all measures, by most opinions, it was sort of rammed through at the last minute by a 3-2 vote. So we'll be interested in seeing that. Finally, last note about the digital TV transition, because it's still scheduled to happen. June 12th is when all full power analog TV signals will be turned off. If you have an analog TV, you need to either get a converter box or make sure you have cable or satellite TV service, which will take care of the conversion for you. Right now, Nielsen, the ratings people, estimate that 3.8 million households are still unprepared for digital television. Although in the last month, in the month of March, 610,000 households moved into the prepared column. That's a pretty big move. African Americans and those under 35 are the groups most affected by the transition, with 6.2% and 6.3% respectively unprepared. Hispanics are at 5.6% unprepared, down nearly a full percentage point in March alone. And that brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views of our media environment. We're due to have on Matthew Lassar, who is the FCC watcher and reporter for ArsTechnica.com. We're going to be talking about a bunch of things in front of the FCC broadband, the expansion of it. We're going to be talking about the Sirius XM satellite merger, because there's still a few details of that merger hanging fire at the FCC. And I'm sure he'll uncover all sorts of other interesting details about what's going on in Washington that affects our daily right and ability to send and receive good communications. That's in 1 week here on Media Geek. Check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. The radio show is at Radio.MediaGeek.net. If you have any comments about the program, send them to me, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Love to hear from you. The Twitter feed, Twitter.com/MediaGeek. Thanks so much for tuning in.